Douglas Dolphin Us. I'm coming live from Dolphinville. We're sitting here in the pocket of Dolphinville, overlooking the sacred bay, which the Hawaiians call the gateway to the gods. Welcome. It's a beautiful sunny day here, and as I say, we're just overlooking the amazing, beautiful Kealakekua Bay in Kona Coast, Hawaii. We're sitting in Michael Hammer's house studio. And Michael Hammer is a known fixture here in Dolphinville, somebody who's played numerous times as a musician adding sound space to events and meditations. Many of us who have shown up at Joan Ocean's house have heard Michael's tunes as a backdrop to Joan's wonderful meditations. Michael Hammer is an internationally known musician. His interdimensional music is used in over 1,000 meditation recordings throughout the world, including the Awakening of the Light Body series by Dwayne Parker and Sonia Roman. He's been featured on stage in numerous venues, including the WESOC festivals, the James Twyman Psychic Children's Conference, the Light Body Conferences, and a whole bunch of others over the past 15 years. And he's toured Europe and Japan, Australia, and throughout the United States and other venues in his long and storied career these last 15 years. It's really a pleasure to have him here and be a part of this. His meditation CDs, volumes of them now, hold the most awesome spiritual power one can possibly experience in sound energies. Combining Michael's visionary light body music with the science of mantras as empowered by Bob Ficus, the CDs and tapes produce healing and incredibly deep experiences, even for the spiritual novice. Some of the material is so profound and powerful, it may be even considered as initiation material for him. Michael's music varies in response to the energy that is creating it, and that's a special thing. Something we'll talk about throughout the course of the show. The higher beings and guides are a part of the ensemble and transmitting and translating the energies of the next evolutionary steps for humanity in the form of music. He plays two synthesizers to create these soundscapes, and the transmissions are played at once, tracking the technical aspects of the equipment, the various transmissions that are coming through, the unfoldment of the piece itself, and his own movements into other dimensions. All of these are taking place simultaneously. So this is multitasking at its very highest. So Michael, thank you for coming and being a part of this special show.
Thank you, Douglas.
Michael is not a man of words as much as he is a man of music. So today's venue is going to be a little different than our past interview shows, because I know that Michael has great information to share, but it's in the realms of the music themselves. So we're going to go through a musical retrospective of sorts with Michael being our guide and taking us through some of the things that he's explored musically over the last 15 years of being a musician. But first of all, again, thanks for coming and being a part of the show. This is a new venue for me, and where we're located is very, very special. Before we get into where we are, let's just talk a little bit about your background and what led you into this form of creative expression.
It all began, I guess, with my love of music. As a child, I used to play on the piano. I'd open up the board and sound into it, pluck the strings, and I'd just come every moment I could, I'd play with sound. I took viola lessons as a kid, and later when the synthesizer first came out, I really found my calling, and I could create a music with that I knew would go somewhere. And so I saved up my money and bought the first synthesizers, and it was a DX7, my first one, and later a Kurzweil. And I just experiment with sound. And then it turned out that I got a channeling from Sonia Roman, and she said I would be creating music. And sure enough, she asked me to create music for her channeling, and I did that, and it became an instant success. And from there on, people wanted to buy the music, so I started reproducing it. I had tape cassette decks, and I kept running them off. I bought 50 of them, and I ran off 50 at a time, and then it just kept expanding. And the other aspect of it is that I had a remembrance from, I don't know where exactly, but some part of the universe where I remember how to create the music, because my background really doesn't add up to what I can do. And so I found that I had this ability where I could just create music in the moment and multi-track it and create many different parts going on, and it was a very it took me into very deep parts of myself, and I just would explore with sound, and people would come over who were channels, healers, and spiritual teachers, and they would use me to track their what they were doing. I found I had the ability to track them in vibration and frequency.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Okay.
What does it mean by tracking?
If someone transmits energy, whether it's through vibration or if they're going into a particular space and transmitting that space, I found I could track it with music and sound and frequency. And so I had a really good training of these master people would come and transmit, let's say, the vibration of Lemuria or Shambhala or different stars, systems, Pleiades, and all over the universe, these vibrations. And I would track them. And at one point we started, this must have been 14 years ago, Interdimensional Travel Club. We'd actually experiment going to different places, and I would create the music, and I would guide the people, and people would come and experience the different dimensions, and the music would help carry the vibration.
Are these guided meditations then that would take you to these other places?
Yeah, they were guided, and often they were just transmitted too. They would need no words, because part of the training also is a lot of the people were friends of mine who did light body, and in the light body there's a transmission space, and so a lot of people had experience with how to transmit from the light body. And also the light body was something that I assisted Sanaya Roman and Dwayne Packer with in creating the music to hold these spaces.
So did you feel that you also were transmitting simultaneous to that? When you say tracking, was that a form of your own transmission in that space of the light body traveler?
Well, what I would do is they would transmit the space. I would tune into that and create the vibration and sound.
Simultaneous to their doing it?
Often it was that way, but sometimes I create it in the future. Sometimes things were created 5 years in the future, and I remember it was very funny because Sinead would say, "Oh, I can't use that music, I can't use the music." And then 5 years later, it was perfect, and she would just be like, "Well, how did I know?"
Well, you didn't know at the time that you were transmitting or tracking something that was out of the time-space continuum.
Well, since all time is simultaneous, there must have been some way I connected into that.
All right, so what I'd like to do is you were going to play us some examples of some of the music that was coming out at that time. To give us a little bit of a handle on how that sound space developed and how people were using it. So can you set us up for this first track that you're going to play us?
Yes, the first track I'll play is Radiance, and that was created in 1989 for a meditation that Sanaya Roman channeled.
And what album is this on?
There's an album called Radiance, and it's 5-minute excerpt from that album.
Very good. So this is called Radiance, 1989, Michael Hammer.
Thank you.
That was Radiance, Michael Hammer's early venture into the soundscape music. We were talking a little bit earlier, Michael, and you were talking about what was your life like before you got into this adventure of creating music. And although music was very much a part of your life, you said you were excited about the new synthesizers and what they were very expensive. And you had an interesting story about how you were going to make money to pay for this musical equipment. Why don't you share a little bit about what you thought your life was going to be back then and how that changed?
Well, I thought I could make $1 million in 1 year because I just thought I had the ability to do it. And I actually accomplished that. It took me maybe a year and a half. But then I couldn't stop. So I kept going. I accumulated 15 properties in Santa Cruz. Some of them were multi-units. And I had a whole, before I knew it, I was way over my head in management. And I was doing it single-handed. And I had no time for vacations or anything, or my music. And in 1989, the big 8.2 earthquake came to Santa Cruz, and everyone sustained a lot of damage, but the real estate prices just dropped, plummeted. The earth was like jello for months. No one believed in the earth as having any security, so the real estate market just went down the tubes, and I lost $2 million and went into Chapter 13. And but coincidentally, that's when I first started, giving my music out there to Sanaa, and that started really taking off. So it was one thing died and the other thing resurrected.
That seems to be typical of a lot of the spiritual pathways that many of us have encountered or been a part of. When something ends, something is there to replace it. If we trust that, this whole life is an unfolding journey, which my personal belief is that we are put here to experience, and pain is a choice, not necessarily a consequence, but that these changes were there. The Santa Cruz area is known as a very, very intense spiritual area. The Santa Cruz Mountains have many, many so-called energy vortexes there. There's a lot of sacred grounds that the Indians, Native Americans held sacred and still do. There's still a lot of energy there. And it's kind of curious that that particular area is where you had your investments, and it just kind of shook itself in such a way that everything no longer was solid, and metaphorically and literally be turned to jello, and your life suddenly went into a state of flux, and another doorway opened. So I think the lesson is that you decided to, instead of taking a gun to your head or going into a fit of depression or drinking or whatever that people who seemingly lose something do, you used it as a segue into something that really elevated your life into another level. So you kind of had to use that. I mean, what choice did you have, right? To let go is really kind of a spiritual clue that we all have used. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, very much so. I could feel the energy just going from one area to another with me, and I could feel all the support. And people came out of nowhere to help support me and get my music out, and it was just a wonderful feeling that there was such a abundance of people helping me.
Well, I think the lessons of abundance are really coming through here. Your music, in a way, is about abundance. It's opening one's inner self up to the wonders of the universe that's all around us. So often we're closed down in our own material worlds, thinking that this piece has to fit into this piece, this rational thing has to go rationally together, or else we can't continue. But as you learned in such a way, and others have learned that, no, that isn't the case at all. So we're coming out of Michael Hammer, the real estate mogul, moving into Michael Hammer the musician, somebody whose work is in demand for creating these special kind of soundscapes. So from Radiance, lead us into the next tune that, if you can help set that up for us.
Okay, the next tune I will play is Healing Your Body. That piece was created, I believe, a couple of years after Radiance. And it was done for a channel who's, I can't even remember her name now, it's so long ago. But she was told to create this piece, and I created the music for it, and it was titled Healing Your Body.
Mm-hmm. So she was led to you by mutual friends, and this piece, Healing Your Body, came out of it. So without further ado, Healing Your Body. Thank you. right, that was healing the body. And there's a process that went on inside and outside, Michael at the time. It's kind of curious that these people started to find out about his music. More people, as you say, people who were tied into channelings and special energies from inside the earth, outside the earth, outside the galaxy coming in. And healing the body is a process that is part of the spiritual pathway. You want to get your body aligned energetically so that you can prepare your higher self for the ascension process. This has been a word that's been used repeatedly over the last 10 or 15 years, and it's come to mean different things for different people. Personally, ascension for me means a perspective, one that I have been able to lift myself above a current situation and see sort of a lofted view, an ascended view of everything that's going on. It's given me a higher perspective, so to speak, literally and figuratively. What does ascension mean to you, Michael?
For us, it was bringing in, we worked as a group. It was Shalaya, Zandriel, myself, and Antiquila. And we worked together as a group, and what we were doing is bringing in the new frequencies to the planet at that time, which we call the ascension frequencies. And so the music, I was tracking the meditations, and a lot of them were experimental with new energies coming in, and I was creating this experimental music along with this energy. And so a lot of the titles of all the music that was created are the actual titles of the meditations, which we held to small groups of people. So what I wanted to share next is the new, it's called the New Dispensation Grid, which is from a 4-CD set called Music for Ascension. And so I'll play that next.
All right, we're getting into the Ascension CDs with Michael Hammer.
Thank you.
music itself, we were commenting this as we were listening to it, there's a liquid quality to your music, Michael, that I believe is really essential in what's happening in the shift of consciousness that we are all experiencing now more and more. And I think it's curious that your music was leading you into these areas. Now, what happened was during this time, you had a number of CDs that were being produced, and I don't know how many in number. How many would you say were out there at the release of this last piece we just listened to?
Probably about 12 or so.
So that's quite a bit of music that's out there on the market. And at the same time, you said that another sound or another piece was coming through, which eventually became known as Dolphin Light. Now, the curious thing about this is that you called it Dolphin Light, but you didn't really feel that this composition fit in anything that was going on in your current life and what you were doing. So you kind of put it on the shelf, isn't that right?
Yeah, it came out in an Ascension class, and I just feel a dolphin energy come right in, and it's unmistakably dolphin. And at the time, the music felt too far out there to release, so I held it for probably 2 years before I released it. I didn't think anyone, I don't know, it just felt really out there. And then people kind of coaxed it out of me to hear it, and they said, oh, you should release that. And I said, really? So that's how it became a CD.
Well, during the same time, the literal dolphin energies and dolphin sensibilities became part of your world, because you, I want to know this story before, maybe as we lead into Dolphin Light as the piece that we're going to listen to right now, recognize that Michael was living in California, you were traveling around, you had different venues that you were traveling to, and I don't know whether you were even thinking about coming to Hawaii at that state, or had been in Hawaii and never thought about dolphins, but somehow dolphin energy was something you recognized with this composition. What did you gauge that by? How did you know it was dolphin energy? What was telling you that in this composition?
I don't know. It's a familiar energy, and I just could recognize it. And I have been visiting Hawaii prior, since I came here for 11/11. That was in 1991. And kept visiting various islands on Hawaii ever since. No, I didn't swim with dolphins till about 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And so, what led you to this particular area where the dolphins most commonly come to play? We know that now as the gateway of the gods, the place where the dolphins and whales both come.
Well, there was a retreat on the Hilo side of the island, and part of the retreat was a cruise on the Fairwinds, and it ended up in Kealakekua Bay. And I remember this snorkeler just swimming out of the water, and who I didn't know, he just saw me on the boat and said, oh, are you Michael Hammer? and it just felt like a welcome. He just welcomed me. And I always had this, I looked across at the mountains where I'm now living, and I just felt a real resonance of that area. And so I looked at all the islands trying to find the best place, and energetically I felt the Big Island was the best, and the area where I'm living right above Kealakekua Bay was the best of that area, of the Big Island. So that's where I bought my property.
Mm-hmm. Now, well, you've heard this in other shows that I've done here on the radio programs. I talked about the significance of exactly where we are in terms of the latitude of the planet. 19.5 degrees literally comes right through, 19.47 to be specific, right through this property. And lines up exactly where my house happens to be above Michael's by a couple of hundred feet. But there is a very, very distinct kind of energy out of this area. And I've come to recognize it under various different, for different reasons, other people as well. Those who are into sacred geometry recognize it as being the tetrahedron as it intersects in the sphere. So coming right out here, Michael sensed something, And I think it's safe to assume, listening now to the music and what it does to you and how it frees one up to liquefy our consciousness, that being here is almost a natural outcropping. So what I'd like to do is go ahead and listen to this composition that came a couple of years prior to Michael actually having encounters with live dolphins on an etheric level, or as the Aboriginals would say, on a dreamtime level. The dolphins came through with this composition. And just to let everybody know, these pieces that we're listening to are mere samples of longer pieces. And I would encourage you, if you like this and resonate with this music, that Michael's music goes on for usually 20 or 30 minutes. We talked about 30 minutes being the technological size that matched with the cassettes that were being made. So without any ado, this is Dolphin Light. So that was Dolphin Light. Now, as we were talking about this, Dolphin Light actually came as a composition prior to any encounters with actual physical dolphins. And the curious thing was that the composition itself was so different than anything else you had done prior to that or during that same time that you felt that it didn't even fit into your catalog or of music at that point in time. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. But now, as you say that, my memory is I did have sort of a dolphin experience at the Hilton Hotel, and I actually got to go in the pool with these bottlenose dolphins, and that was right around the time, so I think that could have been an influence.
Well, okay, so this opens up a territory, because my own earliest recollection of being with dolphins in the wild happened to be the Atlantic bottlenose dolphins. And as we know from researching, John Lilly, who is the father of dolphin communication, human and dolphin connections, used Atlantic bottlenose dolphins in his tests to determine levels of intelligence and the possibility that they might be able to communicate with this other species. My own personal experience with the bottlenose of the Atlantis bottlenose, they have the largest brains of any mammal in proportion to the body. That is to say, the size of their brains in relationship to the size of their body is larger than any other mammal on the planet, and that includes man. There's some argument amongst neurophysiologists about this, but John Lilly verified that the actual brain weight, the complexity of the bottlenose brains, the connection to the spine, the cerebral cortex, is much larger, much more convoluted and complex than humans, which seems to indicate, by our measurements, a level of intelligence that is equal to or greater than humans. So it's no mistake that perhaps something happened getting in the little pool with the captive dolphins up at the Hilton here on the Big Island that resonated that liquid inside of you that, lo and behold, became dolphin energy translated into the CD Dolphin Light. Would you say that has a fair assumption?
Yes.
But it was so strange for you, so different, let's say, than anything you had done before, you actually felt taken aback, put it on a shelf, and continue to do these other more traditional forms for yourself of ascension music and what we were listening to before. There seems to be a difference. So we're going to go take a kind of a sidestep to compositions done from an album called Sacred Heart. And I think if you're astute enough, you'll listen to the difference between these two tracks and examples as to how the music actually shifted kind of back into the sensibility of having wide expanses of sound space, whereas the Dolphin Light seemed to have, we were calling them entities, or some kinds of sound forms that occupied the space more densely. Would you say that's a good assessment? And what's the title of this piece we're about to listen to from Sacred Heart?
Yes, the next piece is called, it's from a 2-CD album called The Sacred Heart. This is created maybe 5 or 6 years after Dolphin Light. And this piece I'm playing is called Ecstatic Union. And the album has to do with the opening of the Sacred Heart in there from meditations given by Anandi Mahadevi, which were specifically done for opening the heart.
So let's open our heart, the Sacred Heart, with this meditative music. Okay, we're back with Michael. We're sitting here. This is a gorgeous day overlooking the bay. We have the twinkling golden light as the late afternoon is about us. This will be, you'll be hearing this program in about 24 hours from the time it's being recorded now. But it is one of those sensational days. We've had kind of unusual weather here on the Big Island, more rain than anybody has ever remembered in history, maybe recent history, but maybe long-term history. It's made everything a lush green, which is not too typical. It's more dry over here. But there's something with all this rain. The Hawaiians, of course, thought of rain as a blessing. And so it feels as if this land has been blessed over and over again, and the leaves and the trees and the birds, the bees, all of it are just singing with this new life energy that is the springtime, the resurrection energy. And a lot of what Michael's music has been about has been sound spaces to assist in our own healing. The Sacred Heart was about the healing of the heart energy and the meditations around that. My own experience coming to the Big Island was one of asking for my own healing of the heart. And I sense very directly that many, many people coming here have that connection to the experience of being here. The dolphins seem to be able to naturally provide an environment for that kind of healing. They're very, very soft energy, and energy which allows us to sort of like get back in balance with ourselves, so that healing energy is there. The dolphins play a very important role in Michael's life, and as we heard earlier, the dolphin light was composed after one experience, but now these musical forms, this last cut and the future cuts, have been composed while Michael's been living here. I'm curious to learn from him what it was like when he first entered in the water, the sacred waters here, and was confronted with a dolphin.
Well, it took me a little getting used to. I was used to swimming in deep water, and the fear of sharks was always the first thing. But then when the dolphins came out, all that fear would be erased of the depths of the ocean. And you just felt so embraced and protected, and the dolphins would just come up and look you in the eye and play with you and spin over you and jump, and it was so joyous. And I started getting in the habit of going out every morning and swimming with the dolphins, because it was the way to start the day here. Mm-hmm. I could see them from my house jumping, and I knew that when they were jumping, they wanted to play. I couldn't resist.
Well, were you inspired by this to compose music?
Oh yeah, that energy carries on to the everything you do. It just trickles into every aspect of your life. This joy, bubbling joy, is the essence that just so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So. Did you buy the land before you swam with dolphins, or did you swim with dolphins and say, okay, I need to buy some land here?
I'm not sure. That was 7 years ago, whether I swam with them before I bought the land or not. I'm not sure.
Well, this is a prime view spot for looking down at the bay, and you can see the dolphins if they've come in. And they're apart, the energy apart. We know that the dolphins and whales project their sound bubble up on the land, some believe as much as 5 miles. So being in this position where Michael is, and we also believe that the dolphins and whales know how to navigate the so-called dream space realities, or the dream time of the Aboriginals. So just being here in proximity of the dolphins and whales, even sleeping on the lanai, as we both do, exposed to the night air, exposed to the ocean, and listening to the waves and the invisible sounds that we can't even hear, they're all affecting us, affecting our bodies. And the music that's coming through, in a way, I've always sensed, and when I've heard Michael's music, that he was recreating the sensation of floating free in that sound space. Now, for me and many other people, that sound space has vital information. the information that the dolphins bring to us is unique for everyone. Everyone translates it differently. Some people ask questions and they seem to hear answers coming in return. Some people hear spontaneous music coming to their heads, or different kinds of intonations, tones themselves, which they identify as having come from the dolphins or having been elicited from within because of the dolphin experience. Was that your case? Did you hear tones and sounds and musical forms that came to you?
Oh, yeah, the ocean is one big musical resonator. Sounds carry in water far better than they do in the air. And it's amazing what you can hear if you really listen to the ocean. I could hear the dolphins as soon as I put my head in the water on shore, and it could be way out there. And oftentimes the whales are singing, and there's sound within the water itself, and the dolphin sounds are always different every time I hear them. They have a much very wide range of sounds, and they always are surprising me with new ones. Mm-hmm. And it does influence my music.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you had the opportunity of actually encountering a whale while you were swimming in the water?
Yeah, I've had a number of really close encounters where I've been like 3 feet away from a whale, looking eye to eye in a whale, and some incredible times where I've been like 2 hours with a whale, very close up and playing with it, and very conscious eye contact.
Describe the difference between that and, say, the dolphin contacts. How would you describe the difference between those two?
The whale energy is so vast. It's expansive and vast, as they are, and big. And they're much more conscious, too. They're very conscious. They feel more conscious than humans. And they're utterly aware of everything that goes on. That's my feeling.
Well, it's a pleasure to be able to be in proximity of these amazing creatures who've evolved, some believe, millions and millions of years, and in that time have developed skills with dealing with levels of frequencies, subtle frequencies, defining their reality as sound spheres. And it's only natural, your world being that of sound, that you would have something to communicate with them on these subtle levels. And just like when you compose the music, and you told me, I think, when we had a conversation, that there's no set formula. You don't have an idea of what's going to happen. And you kind of like have to put yourself in a position to move aside your ego and allow the music to come through you. You're the instrument as well as the synthesizers themselves. So I'm comparing it to what people swimming with dolphins, their own bodies being the instruments of their receiving the sound energies and how it translates. So I'm just putting clues out there for people who want to know what this experience is about, from somebody such as Michael and myself, who are coming from it from different points of view, and yet we're sharing a common space and a common understanding. Well, now these compositions from Sacred Heart led then naturally into the next series, from the Soul Alignment series. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
This is in the year 2001. A lady named Karina Leitner emailed me saying she wanted to get together with me and maybe play music with me if that was possible. This was like she was going to the WESAC festival in Mount Shasta, and I was there. She's from Austria. And so we met the day before WESAC, and I said, okay, I'll bring your flute. And I turned on the recorder, and precisely this album came out exactly as we just had never met, and it was perfect. So I did feel there was a downloading of her musical prowess or vibration before I met her, so I was able to really connect and know how she moved with her flute and everything, and so it as all my music, there's nothing rehearsed. It's all in the moment. And so I I'll play you a cut called Birthing the Divine Soul. That's the first cut on Soul Alignment.
And a telepathic way of interpreting music.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back. Well, I'm getting very relaxed. I don't know about you out there in Radio Land. This has been music that is intended to get us into a state of meditation. And in that state of balance, healing can take place. We let go of all of those stressful things, the accounting system that goes on inside of our heads. We're able to divorce ourselves from those day-to-day, mundane, routine things long enough to just let our body float free in this etheric space that Michael is so adept at putting together. This last album, which was a collaboration effort, Michael mentioned that it was no rehearsal. He had not heard any previous music of this young woman. She was familiar with his music form and had asked him to come together. They just set up in the studio, started the recorder, and lo and behold, everything just fell into place as if they had been playing together for years. And I think one comes to expect that of highly accomplished musicians. But more importantly, I think both of them were connecting on this etheric level. They were probably playing music on the Dreamtime level far before they got together and physically started to make these things happen. And it's a good illustration of how we can interact with other people. Oftentimes, when we have a predestined encounter with somebody, perhaps those dialogues are already started before we meet each other. So when it's so easy to be with certain people, as if you had been with them before, maybe this is part of the play that's going on, where we're enabling ourselves to communicate on a more deeper level. The next series that we're going to get into now is about creation. The Essence of Creation is the series and the name of the albums. And it kind of leads me to talk some of a topic that I wanted to get into with Michael, was the creative process itself. I know that for many of us out there, we have creative urges. We want to write, or we want to paint, or we want to play music. And so often we feel that we're not equipped to do that, or we don't know enough about what needs to be done. And this can often get in the way of allowing the process to take place. And in my conversations with Michael, it's been so wonderful because he's said that he doesn't know what he's doing. And that's literally a way of interpreting. He trusts the process, and he knows enough about his instrument to know that what to do when the urges come through. So you kind of put yourself in a position. Years ago when I was in the art business, there was a great painter by the name of Jules Olitsky who told me that every morning he would get up and he would go into a studio and he would prepare the canvases and he would prepare the palettes, and he would be standing ready in the event that the inspiration would come. Just in case it did. No guarantee that it was going to be there, but when it was done, when it did come through, he was ready to meet it. So I think that's part of the process in and of itself. So the beginning of the project has a certain amount of practical things that need to be taken place. You need to have your instrument tuned. You need to have yourself prepared mentally and physically for this thing to take place so that a spirit can come through. Can you kind of like go over what your routine is or how you think about it to get yourself ready for, let's say, the last piece of music that we just heard?
Well, it's different at different times, but on my synthesizer, I have 1,000 sounds I could choose from, and I don't know what sound I'm going to choose. And oftentimes, I might be just doing a sound check and playing a few sounds, and that might spring an idea and the sound I want. And other times I'll just start with one sound I'm familiar with, and then it'll change immediately to other sounds. I just put myself in a space where I tune myself in and just let it flow. And fortunately, most of the time it does.
How would you compare this experience to swimming with dolphins?
Oh yeah, there is. It's very much like being in a pod with a dolphin. When you're in the energy of a dolphin, it just carries you, and you forget about time and where you are, what direction you're going, and you're like moving so much with the dolphins that you actually become a dolphin, and you become startled when you realize you're a human. Well, when I play music, I become the music, and I forget who I am when I'm just totally that music. And that's when the really good music comes through, because just pure music and just riding the wave.
Well, so it's a matter of allowing the energy to surround us. So often people who are seeking out the dolphins will be pushing this huge bubble in front of them. I call it the bubble of expectation. They want something to happen so desperately. And it almost seems as if the dolphins are saying, no, 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 this isn't how you get close to us. You have to let go of the expectation of what you think is going to happen so that you can allow what is supposed to happen in. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yes. You can't come with expectations. And I've learned with the dolphins, because they could be from one end of the bay to the other in a minute, that you just enjoy the moment.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of amazing when one thinks about the parallels that we're dealing with here. Well, I'd like to sort of segue into this next section of music. Maybe you can set up the essence of creation and what surrounded that and how it relates to what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, the essence of creation is a co-creation with Lalama Shema and myself. And Lalama sings in light language. And also this is, you know, we get together and I just play music and she sings. It's not rehearsed at all. It's just whatever comes. And this album is probably, the music was done a year and a half ago and the album just came out. And I'm going to play the first cut, and then I'm going to play two others, short ones.
Okay, this is relatively new music, voice accompaniment, The Essence of Creation, with Michael and Lalama.
Thank you.
really a breathtaking album, and the voice adds another dimension to your music, Michael. I think it sort of brings it into a very, very human. Most of the stuff we've been associating with the etheric realms and the non-physical frequencies of the angelic and ascended realms and dolphins and ocean. But the voice, although very etheric in nature, somehow really brings it into the hard chord for me. It's really beautiful stuff.
Thank you, Douglas.
So we were talking about Le Lama and how the two of you have developed a beautiful accord of music. And she's over in Australia now, and she's staying in a place that you like to visit a lot, Byron Bay. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Byron Bay, its connection to the Big Island and Shasta. How do you see those three locations connected, not only for yourself, but, say, planetary?
Well, for one thing, I notice the vibration there in those three places are similar. The people who live there are similar, and a lot of the people circulate between the three. They're all very creative places. A lot of artists live there and musicians. And they're all vortex places. The energy has a certain quality about it that's very good for creating and healing and spirituality.
Last part, well, the middle part of last century, we would call those artist colonies, people who were generated to a place. And who started it? Who knows? You know, usually it's surrounding around beautiful views, landscape that has a resonant energy just in and of itself that everybody can recognize that. Ooh, that's really beautiful. But the special quality that exists in Shasta and Sedona, Santa Fe, Byron Bay, the Big Island, and other parts of Hawaii, I feel that certain land absorbs the energy. And like the Mona Lisa is a good example of a painting that has been stared at for generations and centuries, and rather than just being another picture on the wall in the Louvre, it seems to capture everybody's imagination. There's always several rings of people surrounding that painting. Why? Because everybody who stares into that painting, this is everybody who stares into these sacred landscapes, there's some part of their energy that remains. And so it builds up over a period of time. We talk about a vortex as a way of describing a swirl of energy, of how energy moves in space. And when there's a focus of that energy, we start to think of it in terms of a vortex, because energy is moving all the time. And vortexes don't necessarily mean stationary, but they seem to hover like a top spinning in an area around certain areas like Byron Bay, the Big Island of Kealakekua, and certainly Mount Shasta, Sedona comes to mind. Santa Fe has been known for a long, long time because of where they're positioned. It may have to do with the latitude and longitude. One of the connecting things between Byron Bay, the Big Island of Hawaii, and Mount Shasta seems to be the mythology surrounding the ancient continent of Lemuria, or Mu, as it's been called. I have a very strong sensation that this island contains informational energy. Perhaps it's a couple of miles down below the mountainside here, underneath that much water, because maybe between that time and this time, the water level has risen up. That's why we can't see any signs of the former civilization. But something in the water that the dolphins carry is part of that informational stream, and we seem to connect with that. Do you have any associations with Lemuria?
Well, all I know about Lemuria is the essence of its vibration feels like paradise, and this is as close as it comes to it here. And it's just something about the quality of the energy, and I don't know how to put it into words.
You don't have to put it into words. You can put it into music, and that's your talent, and that's your communication skill. I'm the word guy, okay? Well, that was Essence of Creation, again, that was created, and we're coming up to more current material leading up to some of the work that's going on now. There's a new album that we're about to premiere now, maybe for the first time for many of you who even follow Michael's work, and it has to do with our connection to, again, the galactic gateways, the Pleiadian gateways, to be specific. Tell us about the Pleiadian gateways, Michael.
Well, First of all, this has not been released yet. It's an album to be. It's a future album. And in Australia, there's a lady named Kuala, who is in charge of the Ascend Foundation, and she asked that I compose music for the opening of the Alcyone and Palladian Gateways, which I forget the date it was. This was approximately a year to a year and a half ago. And so what I'm playing next is the music that I did for these two gateways.
There's a possibility of going into water crystals before that. We'll do this after. They kind of came at the same time. And, of course, water energy, water crystals, water intelligence, these are all mixed in with this new sensibility that's coming down. We'll talk about that after the Palladian Gateways.
Thank you.
Occurred to me when I was trying to put words to Michael's music, how would one describe these kinds of etheric realms so that we get a handle? And I came up with a series of words that might resonate with some of you. Sounds something like this. Michael's music's their experiential, incorporate experiential awareness of vibrational space as generated by the conditions of the event of that space that form a musical sound sculpture and an oral imprint of the atmosphere. That's what it feels like to me. Now, maybe those are two weird words for people. I want you to kind of like grasp, though, that these are living spaces. They're not just flat, two-dimensional representations of musical forms. Michael is tapping into a wave frequency. The wave frequency we've identified is a form of pure information that goes beyond our linear restrictions, our linear constructs. And in doing so, it acts as a healing agent to help us balance what we have identified as energy points within the body. I think this is important and significant because it's a parallel to what the dolphins have been doing and showing us that they do when we enter into their spaces. And even when we're not in the water, just being and thinking about dolphins will open us up into these kinds of etheric spaces. So that's part of the music of Michael Hammer, is introducing what it feels like beyond the logic, beyond the linear constructs, to be in that balanced, harmonic informational space where healing can take place. What do you think about that, Michael?
Well said.
Michael is a man of few words. Well, I would like to ask you, before we get into this final segment of music, some of the things that you've experienced and some of the very enlightened beings and high frequency beings that you've had in contact with, you've witnessed some of the changes, and you've heard about many changes. Earth changes are some of the words that we use to describe the acceleration of human consciousness, the so-called ascension of the human spirit. How have you witnessed that change, let's say, over the last 10 years? And where do you think it's taking us in the time ahead of us?
What I've witnessed is that people are becoming more connected with their higher selves and their soul purpose, and bringing more of who they are from there into the earth. And so it's more integration, more balancing the earth with the spiritual life, and more integration and being connected to the earth and at the same time being spiritual. And to me, that's what's really important, that grounded aspect. And what I see occurring down the timeline in the future is that we're going to create a heaven on earth here. It's in process, but it's becoming more and more so. And we're going to see, as a result, longer lifespans and more harmonious relationships and balancing the male and the female. And that's people who are more aligned with their soul purpose and doing their life work and more harmony and every area of your life.
Well, that's the kind of future I can buy into and where I want to put my energy and attention. What's occurred to me over the last several months is how we're describing these new changes in our ways of thinking about things. The dolphins and whales have given me insights that I've been able to put some words around. One of them that keeps coming up is the idea of our liquidness and how our bodies are mostly water, somewhere around 80%. And lo and behold, it's about the same proportion that we look at Mother Gaia, 80% water. And further, the same consistency of water is in our bodies as what we find in the ocean, almost identical saline solutions. So what is that telling us? That in this, the microcosm and the macrocosm are really the same thing. And as some of our guests like Nassim Harriman has pointed out, if you reduce through an electron microscope and look down to the smallest particles that we can discern, what do we see? We see a universe. We see orbiting planetoids and mostly space that separates these things on an atomic level that mirror the same thing that's happening on a galactic level. And here we are as humans right in the middle. Now, part of the challenge that we've had as a conscious species on this planet, at least in our reckoning of the last 3,500 years or so, and you might extend that to the last 10,000 years or so if you want to really say that this is all we know about in terms of human, is that we've identified with our solidness, the lesser part of who we are, our solid parts of our body, the solid parts of our earth. And we put all of our energy into that, thinking that we've defined ourselves by this solidness. And what the dolphins and whales are showing us, and what the music of Michael Hammer is helping us to understand, is that we're not solid, that a better part of our consciousness exists in a non-solid state, and it's about the space that surrounds us that I identify as a liquid space. So curiously enough, the idea of water and water consciousness and water molecules containing information and how with our minds we can actually alter the state of water by praying to it or thanking it. There's the doctor from, and I always get this wrong, I believe it's Dr. Emu from Japan, who's done a whole series of studies on glasses of water that were meditated upon, prayed upon, frozen, and then those frozen crystals were examined, and he could see a patterning in the examination of those crystals, and he found out that there was a definite change in the patterning. Not only was the patterning different, but the patterning was very disrupted if you projected negative thoughts into the water and froze it, as opposed to positive, creative thoughts. So if this is evidenced, we have evidence to show us that water molecules are manipulated by our thoughts. Think about what it's doing to the water in our bodies. Think about what it's doing to the water on our planet. And remember that your thoughts have power, and they're being affecting everything around us, starting with the water. And so water consciousness really is something new, and yet it's the oldest thing that we know. And more people are studying this. There's a woman, a doctor, a PhD in Australia, who has a website, water-consciousness.com, and she contacted Michael. We're both racking our brains right now. Forgive us for not knowing your name. But she asked him to do a series of musical accompaniments to the water crystal sounds, or sounds of the water crystals. Tell us a little bit about that and lead us into this last piece, Michael.
Yes, this doctor contacted Lalama and myself, and she gave us 13 drawings, which were codexes of the water crystal, and there was a mantra that went along with it. Lalama sung the mantra, and I composed the music to the water crystal. There were 13 of these water crystals, so I'm going to play one of these. And, okay.
So the sound of water and perhaps water consciousness, as Michael Hammer perceives it. Thank you. consciousness of water, 13 different crystalline forms. Now, this won't be an album that you'll find at your local Borders bookstore. This is actually made as a special commission piece to be played with the people who are experiencing water consciousness as part of her workshops and seminars. She may at some point offer it as part of her work, but for the time being, Michael said this is pretty much for her own private consumption and those of the people who are around her. It's kind of neat the way these things come together. And things like this happen all the time. Michael's life is a template of allowing spirit to interact with your life without getting in the way. And it's something we can all learn from. And it's not always been a smooth ride. Don't get you wrong. Just because you've given yourself to spirit doesn't mean that it's a downhill roller coaster ride. I think it's more important to realize that we all face challenges, and that if you trust in yourself and trust in the process, you know that everything changes, everything moves on, and we're moving to higher ground. So it's been, you know, with a lot of grace that we do go through these processes. Michael has been also doing, around the same time, over the last couple of years, a series of personal compositions, what we're calling soul portraits. And these have come. He's been offering them to people. And they're individual soundscape portraits of what Michael has been able to perceive. Michael can probably describe a little bit better the process of these, but tell us how these came about. What stimulated a soul portrait?
Well, a few people asked me for one. And so I gave it a try, and it worked. It's the same basic energy as doing music for a channeling or for a specific event. And what I do is I tune in to their soul level and compose music that'll assist them in their growth.
Well, we know so many advances have come over in the last several years, well, let's say the last 5 or 10 years, surrounding sound healing and sound energies. Sherry Edwards is a well-known sound therapist who discovered that each of us carry with us a certain harmonic frequencies, like a rainbow of colors, octaves of sound, and that often one of those octaves is represented less than others. So we have a lacking of, let's say, a B flat or a C sharp major within our sound frequencies. So she discovered by using and listening and taping people's voices as they were speaking, and she would run it through a computer program, and lo and behold, there always seemed to be a certain sound tonality that was missing. So she began experimenting with this and found that if she put that sound energy frequency into these people and had them listen to it on headphones or even subliminally played it in their workplace, that their life suddenly took on a different dimension. They would start feeling differently about themselves. That's just one example of how sound healing energy is now coming into our sphere of reference. I think if you begin to conceive that the dolphins and whales have been here for, some believe, millions of years, they have evolved a biological apparatus that can discern sound down to the most minute detail. They can hear a range of sound that's, some believe, 100 times greater than humans. And they've learned to discern those sound frequencies and those subtle frequencies and get energy information out of those. They see the world through a sound energy bubble. It's a sonogram to them. Their whole perception of reality is a liquid, transparent framework. It's a hologram that they're able to look at. So when they see us, they're not seeing a solid body in water. They're seeing us as a slightly denser form of liquid in a larger liquid body. And within that denser form of liquid, they're seeing our sound energy frequencies. And they're reading them by ways that only they can understand, but it's been believed that quite naturally, they're instrument tuners. And they look at your sound body frequency, they send sonar waves through it, and because they are balanced creatures, they also naturally attune your body frequencies and resonant frequencies to a harmonic. And maybe for the first time, you are in total tune with yourself. So no wonder we're walking out of the water with big smiles on our faces and this euphoria rising up inside, because for the first time, we're clicking on all 12 cylinders or 8 chakra points or however you want to define that. So much of the sound portraits that Michael is getting involved in is probably in an etheric way employing the same kinds of things. He is sensing a portrait that is a reflection of a sound energy bubble that is coming from a person. And although he's not listening to their voice and deciphering as a computer program, Michael is able to tune in to the subtler realms, maybe like the dolphins and whales who are his friends and his allies. He's learned ways of tapping in to these subtle frequencies. And he doesn't have to label them because they're non-linear in their nature. But because he's trusted that aspect of himself, he's able to compose and pull out musical intonations that apparently have a very positive effect on the people. So these sound portraits are what we're going to listen to now, a couple of examples of sound portraits of what he has determined and brought out from his experience of being in the ethers and making a portrait of somebody.
Thank you.
this sounds like to have your soul portrayed by the master musician and somebody who looks in between the lines, space, sound, time, energy. Thank you, Michael. The time has gone by. We are just spaced out here. And although I haven't been watching the clock, it feels like we could have been here 10 minutes or 10 hours. And I kind of like that. It's like floating in with the dolphins. You lose all sense of time and space. And part of us needs to lose those kinds of linear things and restrictions that are holding us down like tethers to this world. It's all about changing. It's all about feeling from the inside out. And these are ways of getting there. Well, Michael, you've been very, very generous with your time. I really appreciate it. I know that everything that you do is a state of perfection for you. You won't let go of something until you feel right about it. It's evident with everything that you do and represent, the place that you live. There, without getting into detailed descriptions, it's literally a Balinese paradise here. A constructed open design with beautiful furniture, bamboo, and wood designs, carvings of whales and dolphins. And these are all coming, springing from the mind. Michael told me you memorized the things from the Balinese markets to come back here and then scope out where they would all go. And your memory serves you well, my friend. This is the second big, big house that you've built on this property. And it will serve as sort of a retreat house for people and groups coming here. Is that correct?
Yes. We have groups that come here and do their retreat, and people interact in the ocean with the dolphins and turtles and fish.
Plus your music, which is all about. Well, we're coming to the end of this. I did want to ask you a little bit about some of the future projects and mention to the people that, aside from doing these beautiful CDs, soul portraits and different things, Michael's also been involved in some film projects. Two that come to mind, which were independent productions by Steve Woodcock out of England. Between Two Women was actually a BBC production that came out a short time ago, and one that's still in post-production right now called Jealous Gods. That may make it to the commercial circuits, so keep an eye out for Jealous Gods or Between Two Women. You'll hear the sound spaces of Michael Hammer holding up those spaces. You've got a few other things ahead of you now. There's a European tour coming up, and some things like the weekly meditations. Tell us a little bit about the European tour.
Beginning in September, I'm going to London for World Angel Day, and then Glastonbury, Vienna, Austria, Germany, Holland, Portugal, a couple of places in Portugal, and there'll be other places. It's still in process of being organized.
And the other thing that you mentioned was that at some point, when you're here for any extended time, you hope to be able to establish maybe a weekly musical meditation chamber for people to enjoy. How's that going to work?
Well, I enjoy playing music for people in meditation. And since my equipment is here and I have a wonderful space to hold people, I will, when I come back from the tour, I'll be holding weekly meditations with just music.
Really looking forward to that, and we've been talking in, for the last couple of days and in between the breaks about incorporating more of Michael's music as part of the Dolphinville radio programs, and it may be that we'll be able to maybe even consider broadcasting some of these meditations live out to the internet so that not only will the people here on the Big Island be able to enjoy them, but all over the world, if you want to be part of that meditation space, we'll be able to reach out. The hours will be strange, but even as an archival file, I would believe that these kinds of things would go beyond the limitations of time and space. And the other thing that we're working on is what I'm calling the Dolphinville playlist of Michael Hammer's music. You've heard some samplings. Most of these samplings are 5 or 6 minutes of much longer pieces, 30 to 40 minutes, some of them even longer, which allow you to really go deeply into these meditative spaces and to explore areas floating freely in this liquid consciousness that we're coming to know and really appreciate. Michael will be working out with me on establishing what will be the Dolphin Dolphinville playlist. So I thank you for that offer, and look for that in the weeks to come as we put these things together. Once again, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. And Michael, any final words that you care to share with anybody or burgeoning young talents who you might be able to help out on their path?
Thank you, Douglas, for those words. I don't know what to say, but thank you very much for listening. And I have much music that you can sample on my website, which is michaelhammer.com. And you can order music there as well and learn more about the Soul Portraits and my events that I'll be playing at as well, and tours and all that.
Okay, well, I'm going to wrap it up now. I appreciate your time and energy. I will look for you next time here on Dolphinville. We're going to be entertaining some new guests. I think our next guest slated for 2 weeks from today, or 2 weeks from Wednesday, is Jim Zerkowski, who's bringing in some information about soul retrieval and soul advancement. So look for that. The announcements will be coming. And in the future, more people from Dolphinville as we share that space and energy going out. So, once again, we come to the end of our program. And I appreciate your listening and bearing with us. Look forward to hearing any feedback. Please send your letters, cards, and messages to broadcast@dolphinville.com. Be happy to entertain those questions should they come up. So, thanks again for being with us, and I appreciate it. I just want to let you know this is Douglas Dolphinus with you again, and I'll see you next time. See ya.